Every time the Blackhawks win this season, you could win big with Circa Sports Illinois. One fan scores a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino, and 100 more win a $100 Circa app credit. Don't miss your shot. See the Blackhawks contest page.
Welcome to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Ermeliotis here with my guy, Jack Heinrich. After a two-week hiatus because of the Olympic break, we are back and we are ready for the stretch run. Jack, good to be back with you. It was nice to have a little break, but I'm ready to get back into it.
Me too. It's been too long. I was talking to someone in the office, and it's been, it's going to be 3 weeks in between games. That's too much. Too long.
It did feel like there was a lot happening in between, just with all the Olympic games and still staying plugged into what was going on in the men's hockey tournament and the women's hockey tournament, for that matter, because it started kind of even before the Olympics even officially even began. Let's just dive into it. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the Olympics in this show. At 7:35, we're going to be welcoming Blackhawks analyst and former USA Olympian Tony Granato to the show. He was actually the head coach for Team USA in the Winter Olympics in 2018. Ryan Donato was on that team from the Blackhawks. That was back when the NHL players didn't participate. So I'm curious to get his thoughts on just the tournament itself and just what USA snapping its 46-year gold medal drought at the Olympics. But let's get into the USA-Canada, the gold medal game itself. It was funny, Jack, because I was watching the quarterfinals, and both Canada and USA had their backs up against the wall, and it got a little nervy, specifically Canada-Czechia. That game, they needed overtime to settle that one. And same with the USA-Sweden game. And as both teams advanced to the semifinals, Canada fell behind 2-0 to Finland, ended up winning 3-2, rallied back in a very nervy semifinals for Team Canada. And then USA took care of business against Slovakia 6-2. I gotta be honest, Jack, I was actually rooting for Team Canada in the semis against Finland, which was up 2-0 on Team Canada, because I wanted our sport of hockey to be on the grandest stage of USA Canada on the gold medal. It just would have drawn the most attention, and I think that's what everyone really wanted. And so it came to fruition, and the gold medal game itself, I was just on John Hansen's show doing the crossover, and like, if you replay that game 10 times, Team Canada probably wins that 8 or 9 times, truthfully. Connor Hellebuck came up so big for the Americans, and the Team USA snaps a 46-year drought, the first gold medal that the Americans have had at the Olympics since the 1980 Miracle Team. It got nervy a lot of times, but they don't ask how. They just have the gold medal hanging around their necks, and Connor Hellebuck was a big reason why.
Yeah, he was. I mean, that was one of the best goaltending performances ever. Especially, was that the third period where he got the stick right at the beginning, and that's the one everyone's got the picture
Devon
of.
Devon Taves.
And you're right. I mean, it just felt like Canada was in the offensive end the whole game, and the U.S. just couldn't get out of it. And then, I mean, Jack Hughes makes that great play on that last where he just kind of pokes it up the ice. And if they don't get that, I think it might be on a 2-on-0 for Canada coming back. And then McKinnon missed a wide open net. They had a 5-on-3 power play. I think you're right. I mean, what did McKinnon say after? He's like, you turn on the tape and tell me who was the better team. But I mean, that's not how it works in sports. But they were able to cash in at that point. And Connor Hellebuck showed why he's so great. And I think it's funny he has to go up to Winnipeg now and play for the Jets after he just kind of broke all their hearts. But it was great. I mean, everybody was watching that game. If you just scrolled on X, everybody was talking about it. And it's nice that, like you said, the NHL players are back. The games are starting up this week again. Maybe that draws more eyes, but it was a big positive for them.
No question. The goaltending of Connor Hellebuck, just all these notes here. The penalty kill did not allow a single goal on the power play. They were 18 for 18. Austin Matthews, I thought, was excellent in the tournament, and he's got all the playoff, you know, has never made it past the second round with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, I thought he was fantastic. What I do want to talk about, though, is, unfortunately, Patrick Kane wasn't on this Team USA roster, and he will go down as the greatest American-born player ever. And obviously with his age, where he's at, he just wasn't going to be part of the roster, especially given the hip resurfacing surgery that he had a year and a half ago. Like, he's had an uphill battle. But I thought about how many players on Team USA on this roster was impacted by Patrick Kane. And some of the names that I listed here, the Hughes brothers, Jack Hughes's favorite player growing up was Patrick Kane, who scored the overtime winner yesterday, Jack Hughes in the gold medal game. Quinn Hughes, obviously a big fan of Patrick Kane as well. Austin Matthews, you ask him who his favorite player was growing up, Patrick Kane. Who is Austin Matthews? Team Canada's, or Team USA's captain at the Olympics. The Tkachuk brothers, Brady and Matthew, talk relentlessly about how, what Patrick Kane means to them and how he was their favorite player growing up. If you watch Matthew Tkachuk, he bites on his mouth guard. That's what Patrick Kane did in the early years when he just ditched the mouth guard because it became a distraction. I think there's even his first video game cover is him chewing on the mouth guard, Patrick Kane. Charlie McAvoy, ask him. He says Patrick Kane was one of his idols growing up. He was the top pairing defenseman for Team USA. Clayton Keller, while he was the 13th forward on this team for Team USA, his favorite player, Patrick Kane. Then you have Jack Eichel and Dylan Larkin. They both say Patrick Kane comes to mind when they think about Team USA. I just named 8 players on this team. That's almost half the roster that played yesterday in the game. Honestly, you could probably go, you could say half the roster if you exclude the 2 goaltenders. Like, Patrick Kane has made such an impact on Team USA's growth, and the fact that it culminated in a first gold medal game for the USA with NHL players participating in the Olympics in God knows how long, because you got to go beyond 1980 since it was a bunch of college players at the time. Boy, like, I hope Patrick Kane is smiling on what they accomplished and recognizing the role that he played in growing the game of hockey in America.
Yeah, I mean, growing up for me, that was the guy, right? Patrick Kane. And I think I saw he tweeted right after they won and just how proud he was of it. And it did make you think, like, oh, man, like, it would have been pretty cool if he was out there on the ice with them, helping them break that streak. But you can see it, like, you could just see the impact and the guys you named, those were the guys that, like, pretty much got it done. Those are the guys out there on the ice at the end, and especially in overtime when it's 3-on-3 and it's open ice and you got Jack Hughes out there. And it was cool to see that, kind of like what he's built, because like you said, they haven't won a gold in 46 years. They've built up the Team USA, and you thought they could get it done in the Four Nations last year, and then this felt like kind of getting revenge or get back for it.
I don't know if you saw the tweet that went viral yesterday. So Team USA Hockey put a message out on Twitter on January 24th, 2011. So this is 15 years ago. This is a tweet from USA Hockey. It says USA Hockey's 8 and under membership has reached 100,000 for the first time ever. Now, Craig Custins, who was an ESPN reporter at the time, quote retweeted it and said, "Look out, 2026 Olympics." Now, obviously, he was half joking when he said that, but Team USA literally won gold at the 2026 Olympics. And it's hard not to look back at that tweet from 2011 when USA was having, you know, record breaking numbers of youth hockey players wanting to play hockey here in America. And man, I just can't wait to see where Team USA's, like, the, which players they inherit down the road, especially knowing that Patrick Kane was a big idol. And then now you got the Tkachuk brothers, Austin Matthews, the Hughes brothers. I mean, Jack Eichel, like, all these players on Team USA that are going to be, you know, on Team America for many, many years to come. And so I just thought it was a cool full circle moment. I do want to get to Team Canada, though. And we were kind of beating the dead horse with whether Team Canada should or should not have included Connor Bedard on its roster. And the one talking point that we were really honing in on for Team Canada was if they ever got in a situation in the quarterfinals, in the semifinals, in the gold medal game where they needed a goal and they fell one goal short and they had Connor Bedard sitting at home, that feels to me a little indefensible than if they left, you know, a Seth Jarvis at home, who is more of a bottom six guy, depth player, right? And how ironic, when we were watching the 2000, 26 Winter Olympics, three consecutive games, Team Canada was desperate for a goal. Two of those were in the third period. The one of them was obviously, you know, in the gold medal or the overtime goal for, in the gold medal game. The quarterfinals, Team Canada needed a goal on Czechia. They end up getting it, right? They win 4-3 in overtime. Finland goes up 2-0 on Canada in the semifinals. Team Canada ekes one out, wins 3-2. And then in the gold medal game, Team Canada falls a goal short in 3-on-3 overtime. Three consecutive games, Team Canada desperately needed a goal. They got away with it for two of those three games, but then they weren't able to do so in the gold medal game. I wonder if in the back of Team Canada's management minds, if they didn't put as much stock into how much 3-on-3 overtime was actually going to play a role in these Olympics, and if they would have brought a guy like Connor Bedard, knowing what transpired where Sidney Crosby gets injured and he cannot play in the gold medal game or the semifinals. Nathan MacKinnon, I would not be surprised if we hear that he's dealing with something and he probably maybe potentially misses time for the Colorado Avalanche, because he did not look like the same player in the last couple games than he did at the beginning of the tournament. And it, Team Canada was forced to essentially play with essentially be a one line team where they just overloaded with Macklin Celebrini, Connor McDavid, and Nathan MacKinnon. And they didn't really have a second scoring line. If Connor Bedard was on the roster, Team Canada essentially could have said, all right, we're going to put Nathan MacKinnon and Macklin Celebrini together, or vice versa, and McDavid and Bedard together, or Bedard, MacKinnon, Celebrini, McDavid, right? They didn't have that option. And so I wonder if in the next Olympic tournament, knowing how significant of a role 3-on-3 overtime played, if Team Canada and maybe other countries prioritize the skilled offensive players over the players that have some jam and can play. Now you want players that can play specific roles like JT Miller and Vinny Trocheck. They were terrific on the penalty kill for Team USA. But I wonder, like, Team Canada's identity is the skill that they have up front. I wonder if they're going to prioritize that in the next Olympics, even though we know Connor Bedard is going to be on that roster. I wonder if that's something that's like, okay, that's something that we need to overvalue next time, as opposed to, you know, this Olympics when they didn't have that option available to them.
Yeah, it's a good point. And it kind of played out like you were saying, like if they leave him off and then they need that scoring punch, it's like, even if he was like that extra forward and you could just throw him up on the top line, but Crosby gets hurt, some guys are dealing with things, they just throw him up there if they brought him. But I'm sure Bedard will use that going forward. And I think it's nice he had the 2-week break, but I think you could look at those games, like you said, and especially that gold medal game, like you're like, this is a guy that could give you a little pop or scoring punch, even though they had so much zone time and Hellebuck was just unbelievable. Yeah. Bedard's got that shot, and you would take that against anybody, and they left that at home. So I do wonder what Connor was thinking, if he's just like, oh yeah, they could have used me, and maybe he just used that going forward.
Well, it's funny you said that, because I saw Connor briefly today after practice, and I went up to him and I said, you know, I said, Team Canada could have used you yesterday. And his response to me was, he's like, I don't even know if, he's like, I don't know, Connor Hellebuck was way too good. You know, like I don't think anyone could have solved Connor Hellebuck, but we know that Bedard's going to be at the next Olympics. Yeah, it was interesting to me the way that this unfolded, where they had Celebrini, McDavid, MacKinnon all on one line, and they didn't really have a second line scoring. You know, you had Mitch Marner, you got guys like Mark Stone and those players that can score, but that's not the role that they were pegged at the start of the tournament. And I thought it was shocking that Sam Reinhart essentially was relegated to the 13th forward for Team Canada. Like, I thought he was going to play a top six role, and he ends up logging 6 minutes and 57 seconds of ice time in the gold medal game yesterday, which was the 13th fewest. Like, he was 13th out of the 13th as far as Team Canada forwards go. Let's get to our injury report, sponsored by Illinois Bone and Joint Institute. Injured after hours, they've got you covered with access to their clinical team beyond regular clinical hours. Learn more at IBJI.com. I'm going to make this more of an Olympic injury report. We mentioned Sidney Crosby didn't play in the gold medal game. Nathan MacKinnon, I don't believe, was 100%. I think we're going to see a lot of players that participated in these Olympics either get shut down for a period of time when they do return to their respective NHL clubs. Some could even potentially be season ending. We know that Kevin Fiala suffered an injury for Switzerland, and he was done for the tournament. He's going to be out for the rest of the season, which is really unfortunate. But some other guys that were dealing with things, Mikko Rantanen out of Finland, sounds like he's going to be out for a little bit, which is going to be a really tough loss for the Dallas Stars. Brad Marchand, I would not be surprised if he's we're going to get that. There's no way he's going to play for team for Florida out of the break, because like he was dealing with something. Jacob Slavin, it sounds like he was powering through an injury with Carolina. There's going to be a lot of players, and I hope this isn't going to be a talking point for the next collective bargaining agreement, because the players really gave up a lot to participate in these tournaments. But there were a lot of injuries in this tournament that the NHL teams are really going to feel the impact of some of these losses. And so we'll see how that ends up playing out. And then lastly, we should mention the lone representative for the Blackhawks, Teuvo Teravainen. He ends up winning a bronze medal for Finland. Anders Sorensen, Blackhawks assistant coach, represented Team Sweden. And so I'm sure that's a sore subject, the way that Team Sweden lost to USA in overtime, because they were so close to advancing to the semifinals and pulling off that upset. But credit to Teuvo Teravainen bringing home a bronze medal. That no shame in that. I think Finland had the fourth highest odds to win the gold medal. I think Sweden was third, and then it was Canada, USA. And so great. While you go to those tournaments thinking like you want to win gold, I imagine Teravainen is pretty excited that he gets to go home with a medal, because that's got to be a unique experience for him participating in the Olympics and coming home with some hardware.
Yeah, I think in the moment you want the gold, but I think when you look back maybe a year or 5 years later, you're like, that's pretty cool. I got a medal at the Olympics. I don't know how Canada's going to feel about it, because they didn't look too happy getting those silver medals. But
or the stuffed animals.
Or, yeah, I didn't get that. It was like an Olympic thing, I think. Everyone got one of those. I didn't really get that, but and I don't think Nathan MacKinnon did either.
I was just going to say, Nathan MacKinnon is like as driven as any player in the NHL, and the video of him looking at it like, what is this? You know,
he must have not watched any of the other sports and saw that they're giving those out, because he was like,
I was watching with a family member who said it looks like those stuffed animals are going to go to someone's dog when they get home from the like that's that, yeah, that might be right.
Yeah, so I think it is cool. I think you said I think you were saying that the table is going to be back on Wednesday. So
yeah, probably.
It'd be cool to hear what he thought of, and it'll be interesting to see, because it feels like a quick turnaround. Because I think there's what, games on Wednesday, and
yep,
some of the guys might be doing stuff the night before, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out.
Yep, no question. All right, we got more Olympic talk to get to here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Blackhawks analyst and former U.S. Olympian Tony Granato is going to be joining us next, coming up on 720 WGN. We got Freebird leading into a special guest that is joining us now over the phone, CHSN Blackhawks analyst and my former colleague over at NBC, Tony Granato. Tony G, what's going on, Tony?
Hi, Charlie. I love that music on the way in, buddy. I like that.
I wanted to let it play more, but I was like, no, we got to talk to Tony. I got to milk every minute, because you've been on a media tour today. You joined Colin Cowherd's show earlier today on Fox, and now your last stop is here on Blackhawks Live. So thanks for joining us, man.
Of course, man. Always good to talk to you. And obviously, we got lots to talk about. The hockey season's going to get up and started again with the NHL and the Hawks start in a couple nights. But just kind of recapping those 2 weeks of some of the most fun hockey I think hockey fans could ever be given, and it finished the way we all hoped it would, at least on the American side of things.
Yeah, let's get into it. You have a unique perspective of what it means to be part of Team USA, because you've represented the red, white, and blue in a lot of different tournaments as a player at the World Juniors, the Worlds, the 1988 Olympics, but also you were the head coach of the 2018 team. So you've seen it all. What did it mean to you to see the 46-year gold medal drought snapped yesterday, and of course doing so against Canada?
I mean, obviously it's something that you've been cheering for a long time, and you could kind of feel it coming, the momentum for what USA Hockey's done at the international level, on the women's side, the World Junior side, lots of the tournaments, last year's world championships. We went overseas and won for the first time in whatever, how many years, 100 years, whatever it was. So I think it was building and all of the young skill that has been coming along from the development side of things of American kids. You knew the day was coming. You know, we thought the last 10 or 12 years we were on par with Canada, but we had trouble kind of getting across the finish line. Well, yesterday was just kind of a continuation of consistent growth and consistent development of our U.S. players that we knew someday we'd get to the point where we could go toe-to-toe with Canada and find a way to beat them, and yesterday was that day.
Early in the first part of the show, I was mentioning the impact and the influence that Patrick Kane has had on a lot of players that were on Team USA's roster yesterday that won the gold medal. The Hughes brothers, the Tkachuk brothers, like Charlie McAvoy said he looked up to Patrick Kane growing up. What can you say about how much Patrick Kane has meant to Team USA and just what he has done for the sport in elevating it? Obviously, he wasn't part of the Team USA roster at these Olympics, but man, it's hard not to look at the impact that Patrick Kane had on some of these young players and kind of culminated into this gold medal game yesterday.
You know, you're exactly right. And, you know, Patrick Kane, and I remember, 10 years ago with Jim Johansson, who has passed, he was their general manager on our 2018 team, pretty much ran USA Hockey for the last couple decades before his passing. You know, he always said, you know, gosh, every time I call Patty Kane, he answers on the first ring and he says, where do you want me to go? When do you want me to be there? And so all the calls for world championships after the Hawks made that great run with all the cups, as soon as the year ended, there's an opportunity to go play for the U.S. at the world championships. And Patty was always the first call, and Patty was always the first one to commit. And, you know, that commitment shows a couple things. One is appreciation for USA Hockey because he had come through the development team and he had grown through all his experiences and wearing a USA jersey, but also too his love for the game and being an American player. And I think that kind of was really important for the U.S. to have an older player, an elite player like Patty, one of the world's best, be the example for the younger kids that were coming into the game and were really talented. And so, yes, the influence that he's had that way and the influence he's had for young kids that were growing up watching him play when they were 10 and 8 years old, like most of these Olympic players were when Patty came into the league, that's a tremendous mentor to have, and pretend, you know, guy that you want to be like. And, yeah, a lot of those guys learned the game of hockey by watching Patty's stick handling skills, his evasiveness, and his overall passion that he plays the game with that I think a lot of these kids were influenced by him. So I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when all of us hockey guys, when we're young kids, you always find idols that are playing at the levels above us. Mine was Stan Mikita when he was a Blackhawk. And every day I wanted to grow up and do something like Stan did so I could be like him someday. And I'm sure, you know, like you said.
Well, I think we might have lost Tony, but I see him calling back, so we're going to get him right back here on the line. He was talking about the impact that Patrick Kane has had on him, but also looking up to players like Stan Mikita when he was a player. I think we got Tony again. Tony, we got reconnected?
Yeah, you do.
There you go.
Charlie.
It's okay. We're good. We're good.
Bad reception where I'm at.
But I got you.
And so many of the players that you mentioned and probably, you know, majority of them on the team looked to Patty the same way that I looked to Stan. And so I think that says a lot about what Patrick Kane is as a person and player and the influence that he's had on all players that were fortunate enough to grow up watching him play.
I want to get your thoughts on the game yesterday itself between USA and Canada. It was some tight checking hockey, terrific goaltending by Connor Hellebuck. And it just felt like our sport of the game of hockey was on full display as far as the talent level goes, but also the rivalry between the two countries. What did you make of the game itself?
You know, I think the buildup from Four Nations, the game, the U.S.-Canada final game in Four Nations was the greatest game I ever watched up until that point. The intensity, the competitiveness, you got guys battling each other that are teammates during the regular season, and you go away for 2 weeks, you take a break. Now you got to play against your buddies, but you're wearing your country's colors. intensity and the competitiveness in those four games that we saw, which was, you know, kind of everything came together for that last U.S.-Canada matchup. The fights happened before, you know, before the puck really even came into play. The puck was drop fight, puck was drop fight, puck was drop fight. And those fights doesn't mean that that was the fun part of the game, but it showed the intensity and the competitiveness, and it showed what hockey's all about. And that carried over for 1 year. Since that game, I think all of us as hockey fans look forward to the rematch, look forward to a potential gold medal battle between those same two teams, and that's what it came to. And it all worked out as planned as far as, you know, those two getting through some pretty tough games in the semifinals and to get to where they needed to be. But it happened, and it was not a surprise that it, you know, went to overtime. And I don't think it should be a surprise that the U.S. won. I think that both the U.S. and Canada have proven over the last, you know, few years that it's a level playing field and that both teams are sensational. They're world powers. And on any given night, either team can beat the other team. So it was a great display. And I think hockey fans are very grateful. I think fans that didn't know hockey, that were Olympic fans that just tuned in, have an appreciation and respect for the game and for the players that participated and showed the sport off so well.
It was funny watching the semifinals when Finland took a 2-0 lead on Canada. I was almost rooting for Team Canada to get back into it and win the game because I just felt like I wanted to see the collision course of USA, Canada, and the two countries that we saw at the Four Nations last year go toe-to-toe and the excitement and the buzz that generated. I was kind of relieved to see that USA Canada did meet because there were some dicey games in the quarterfinals and semifinals that wasn't a guarantee that we were going to get that matchup.
I mean, look at Quinn Hughes' goal against Sweden to knock off the Swedes in the quarter. So, I mean, it was there are other countries are close too. Like, we can't say we dominate. There's other countries that are great too.
Right.
The US and Canada are a little bit above now. Which is great, but you're right. During that Finland Canada game, you know, just the thought of, you know, Sidney Crosby not being out there, being hurt, you know, what would that be like if you know Sid can't play, and what if he's close to being playing? If they win, he could play in the gold medal game. That was another thought that kept going through my mind on that one too. So I'm with you. I'm glad Canada came back and won. A lot of credit to the Finns. They were close to knocking off the Canadians there. You know, Slovaks had a great tournament. Czechs had a great game against Canada as well. So it was a special Olympics. There were lots of talented teams, lots of great countries represented there. And ultimately it came down to, you know, like we thought it might, came down to an overtime and one shot went in and lots of saves at the one end, saved it the other way. And it was a great display of hockey.
I'm not complaining because the outcome turned out in our favor, but 3-on-3 overtime to decide that was, I wish it was maybe 4-on-4, right? I feel like that would have been a nice compromise, but I understand why they did it because the closing ceremonies were happening later at night, but it would have been cool to see a 4-on-4 finish versus a 3-on-3. Do you agree, or is that just kind of, you know, how it shook out?
No, I won't disagree, but I will tell you, I mean, I was part of the Olympics in 2018 as a coach, and we lost in a shootout and the quarterfinals. Had we won that shootout, we would have went to the semifinals, and there's four teams left, and you win one game, you win one, you know, at least a medal. You win two games, you win a gold medal. So I was on the back end of a shootout loss, and at that time I'm thinking, gosh, it just didn't seem right. But those were the rules. We knew the rules going in. Had we won, we'd probably have been celebrating like crazy, not even paying attention that we won in a shootout. But in the NHL and in the playoffs, you go 5-on-5 until there's a winner, whether you play 3-4 periods, whatever it's going to take. It's the grind of winning the game that is so special in hockey. But in this situation and the Olympics and how the NHL wanted it, they didn't want our players, you know, in a series in between the NHL season to have to play 5 or 6 periods. Had it gone to 2 or 3 overtimes, it just wasn't fair to the players and the league and owners didn't want it. So the 3-on-3 was the rules and the U.S., you know, the Canada had the three best players and, you know, maybe in the world on the ice as well. You think about Makar, you think about, you know, McKinnon, you think about McDavid. And the U.S. had three very talented players on the ice and the U.S. found a way to make the play to finish the game off. So credit to the Americans for finding a way to get that final goal.
Last one for you, Tony. Hawks only had one representative in these Olympics. It was Teuvo Teravainen. Feels like in the next one, the Hawks are going to be pretty well represented. Connor Bedard, Frank Nazar, Alex Vlasic could get a shot with Team USA. Spencer Knight. We'll see maybe Anton Frandell for Team Sweden, depending on how his development path and his growth. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Hawks are well represented in the next one as these young guys take the next step in their developments.
I agree totally. There's no doubt that there's some tremendous young talent in the Hawks organization. So that'll be exciting in the years to come. But I think that, you know, this year, you know, just looking at the way the season's gone, this break was really good for this young team. And, you know, we were both at practice today, the intensity and the competitiveness, and it looks like, you know, getting that second win, so to speak, for these last 20-plus games is going to be exciting for their development, for their growth, for their push on continuing to get better. So I think it worked out well this year, the break and the timing of it for the Hawks. And, you know, they got some tough games coming up, but I also think being young and being in a position now where they had a reset, kind of a mini training camp the past week or so, I'm really looking forward to seeing how they perform here the second part of the year.
Right there with you. Tony, thanks so much for carving out some time for your former colleague. Always appreciate your insight.
My colleague. You're always my colleague. There's no former colleague.
Yeah, that's right. You're my compadre. You're my guy.
Compadre.
I love it.
And good luck tomorrow. Your family's going to expand tomorrow.
So yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Information or not, but
thank you so much. And you're going to be on the call this upcoming road trip. So hope you have a great call. And I know you're going to nail it on the broadcast.
I appreciate that, Charlie. We'll see you soon, buddy. Thank you.
All right. No problem. That is the great Tony Granato. We got one more break to get to, and then we're going to provide some Blackhawks updates from the latest practices as they get ready for the second half of the season. That's coming up next when Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be continues on 720 WGN. Charlie Meliotis and Jack Heinrich wrapping up this show. Let's get to some Blackhawks news. So the Hawks returned to practice last week. So even though the Olympics were still going on, the Hawks were able to return to practice. I believe it was February 18th. The NHL local practices, it's like you couldn't return to practice until 2 p.m. local time last Tuesday. Hawks had an optional practice, which was very well attended. I think only two or three guys didn't participate in that practice. And so the Hawks were essentially able to use the last week or so to, as like a mini training camp, essentially. Like the Hawks made some tweaks to their system. They restructured just a little bit of their D zone coverage. We've seen them experimenting with some new power play zone entries. There's really three, kind of like three zone entries that you can use. You can use the double drop back pass. You can use the drop back pass with two guys that are skating into the offensive zone. And you can use one that's like all five guys that are skating in. We saw the Blackhawks experimenting with all three of that during practice. And so the Hawks have been making some minor tweaks here and there. And it doesn't really allow for teams to do that in the middle of the season, especially an Olympic year. What I thought was interesting, though, is Blackhawks head coach Jeff Blashill said a few days ago that some of the D-zone tweaks that they wanted to make, they actually implemented them in Rockford first, let them kind of test run it for a couple games, and then the Hawks were able to do so when they returned to practice last week. So I thought it was an interesting wrinkle in the schedule where the AHL All-Star break happened, and then they returned for a couple games, and the Hawks were able to utilize the Ice Hogs to kind of test run these new tweaks that they implemented in practice. And so we'll see how that ends up turning out in game form. The Hawks had practice today. They're going to have an off day tomorrow, and then they're going to practice one final time on Wednesday before they get right back in action in Nashville on Thursday. And the Hawks are kicking off a four-game road trip next week. And we have 25 games left in the season. 15 of those 25 will come on the road for the Blackhawks. So only 10 more home games at the United Center this season The next one is going to be on March 6th. And March 6th is a Friday. That is trade deadline day. So the NHL roster freeze, I believe, either lifted overnight or it lifts overnight tonight on the NHL calendar. And I feel like
last night.
Was it last night? Okay. So it's going to be, we're going to see, we should be seeing a lot of movement from NHL teams between now and the trade deadline next Friday, not this coming one Friday, the next Friday. And so stay tuned for that. I'm sure there's going to be a lot to discuss for the Blackhawks. But as far as league-wide moves specifically, I imagine there's going to be some movement. So it's going to be a sprint to the finish, another compressed schedule for the Blackhawks, but they had a three-week break to get fresh and ready to go. And so we'll see how the Blackhawks respond coming out of the break. That's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Next show is a week from today, next Monday, March 2nd at 7 p.m.